When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
ESNY. All right, so it has been a rough summer for the Yankees as we enter Bleacher Creatures episode number 162 for the long 162 game season, brought to you as always by XL Media, Crossing Broad, Elite Sports NY, Warwick Gaming, and as always, RiverQuest NYC. All right, so as we do this, the Yankees have just come off a very bad three-game series in Colorado, the National League worst Rockies. James, we got James Cratch, the managing editor of ESNY, here with us today. James, I don't know how much of that series you watched. I mean, you saw my takeaways. What did you take away from that series in particular?
The main thing I took away is the Yankees bullpen, which people act like is big strength. They blow a lot of games for what is considered an elite bullpen.
Still the best ERA in the majors.
Still the best ERA in the majors. They blow a lot of games. And they just, you know, I go back to, I think it was when they were playing the Cubs, I want to say. I was in the car listening to the radio, and they had a couple runners on. They didn't move anyone over. They didn't get a run. And then John Sterling just went, like, by John Sterling standards, ballistic about how the Yankees don't manufacture runs. They don't do the things you need to do to win games. They end up losing that game to the Cubs. Sort of reminded me of that. It's like you get this great start from Gerrit Cole and you can't manufacture runs, and you get yourselves in this situation where even if you bail yourself out, you still blow it, that bullpen.
I think that we're seeing what happened last year, except a little earlier. And Alec, maybe you can weigh in on this as the catcher of the group. Everyone just looks tired. They've been leaned on so hard, so early, so much. And at some point, like, you're going to hit a wall, even with the All-Star break. And maybe some guys just, they broke their throwing routine. We don't, like, obviously, I don't think they did that. But at some point, what you lean on the most isn't going to be so reliable.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, it's the criticism that we've had of Aaron Boone for the past few years now coming to fruition yet again, which is that bullpen management and his inability to maybe trust his starters that are not named Gerrit Cole to go deeper into games. I think that's what's coming back to, you know, bite them in the ass. Ron Marinaccio is a good pitcher, but he looks tired.
Exhausted.
He can't locate. He's all over the place. And then what happens? He gets drilled for, I think it was him, right? He got drilled for the walk-off home run.
Yeah, that was Notch.
So, like, you know, but you just think of, like, how many games it seemed like he was in at the beginning of the year. Like, there's a time when he was their number one go-to guy, and it's taken its toll on him. And he's a young kid, you know, like, this is, what, his second year in the majors? So, like, he'll figure out, I think, his routine to help, you know, create a little bit more longevity throughout the year. But, I mean, damn, that was bad. That was as bad as it could get.
You could just see, like, whenever he comes in from the bullpen, and I noticed this when he first debuted last year, he came with some inherited runners. He was clearly nervous. Ron Marinaccio wears his heart on his sleeve as a pitcher, and he's so tired. He's like, you can see in the body language, he's laboring out there. Like, this is a guy who knows he has nothing working because he is so damn tired. And he's just trying to figure out, okay, like, what am I going to chuck over the plate today?
Yeah. And so, I don't know where they go from here. I really don't. Well, part of me wants to say just blow it up, like put a fork in it. But you know, that is a soul crushing series loss. And you know, I was just on MLB.com today, and they were like, Yankees frustrated after shocking series loss to the Rockies. And I'm like, well, don't be frustrated. Just play better. Like, this is all self-inflicted. You guys could not be frustrated if you just knew how to play baseball.
And I even said yesterday, Clay Holmes should not be hanging a sinker right in the middle of the plate in a fastball count. But at the same time, Tommy Canley has to get those outs.
Yeah.
Like, he's more than capable of getting those high leverage outs.
It was a failure on so many fronts. So, like, on, you know, you're going down the totem pole. It failed not just at Marinaccio. Like, you know, that was the final straw. It's just, you know, it should never have gotten to that point to begin with.
Yeah. It's tough because you look at the schedule the rest of the way. They've got all these games against the White Sox. They've got all these games against the Royals, the Pirates, the
Nationals,
Red Sox, the Nationals. So you think to yourself, like, coming out of the All-Star break, I was like, this team, in my opinion, is not very good, but I still think they're going to find a way to get to 90 wins solely because they had, like, 35 games left against bad teams. And I was like, all right, they go 25-10. They're basically two-thirds of the way to 90 wins, what they got to get the rest of the way. But then you go lose 2 out of 3 to the Rockies, and it's like, okay, well, now you've got to go 23-8. In these 31 games or 30, you know, and it's just like, okay, well, it's say they drop 2 out of 3 of the Angels. Well, okay, like the numbers get tougher, you know, it sort of becomes like the team across town where you sit there and you say, okay, like this is when the we've been saying this is when the Mets are going to make the run for a month and a half now, 2 months, and eventually you run out of space to make it. So,
yeah,
it's tough, and I agree with Alec, like, blow it up, but what point in season? The time to blow it up was last year.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that if we go down the conspiracy theory route, and if you look at just the types of players that Cashman was adding on top of the very clear three true outcomes philosophy they're trying to implement through Marcus Thames, through Dylan Lawson, it seems almost as though he's operating as if MLB is going to bring back the juiced baseballs. But now that everyone is so aware of it, and MLB pretty much paused a lockout over them and lost the big PR war because of them, they're not coming back. Like, you have to fundamentally change the game to where, okay, the ship is gone, and yeah, okay, people love it or hate it. Hitting has to change, and you can't juice baseballs. And that's why, despite this series loss, to not to go off on another tangent, I'm actually optimistic about Sean Casey, because for the first time in I don't know how long, it seemed that Yankees players stepped into the box and were like, okay, I am here to hit. I'm reading the room. I am here to get a hit. Like, none of this worrying about launching an angle or exit velocity. Just see the ball, hit the ball, get on base.
No, I agree with that. I think there's definitely – so, look, I don't think – I understand there's probably some personal – not personal issues, but, like, Lawson wasn't connecting with these guys the way – but to me, I'm like, okay, it's fine. You don't want to scapegoat him. Well, Cashman hired the guy in the first place. To me, it's not like – to throw out some crazy hypothetical, the Yankees brought Chris Chambliss back and then realized, oh, like, this guy is stuck in 20 years ago. It's not working. You know, they chose Mr. Binder, Mr. Analytics, Mr. Never Played Big League Baseball. And they said, oh, crap, this doesn't work. And I think now I'm like, okay, like, you brought Sean Casey in. He's going to be here to be a cheerleader, to support the guys, rah-rah. He can speak their language. But at some point, is it going to really be enough to fix this team? I don't think so.
I think that at the end of the day, you got to – whatever happens at the end of the season, be it a wild card spot, maybe the Yankees find, like, that magical run in, like they did in 2005 and clinch the AL East. Yeah. I think that no matter how you spin it, this season was underperformance. They underachieved.
100%.
No, yeah. But And so then I think now you look forward and figure, okay, yeah, you can change out Aaron Boone. Who's going to do a better job?
So I actually was saving this tape for you for this.
Okay.
So I was thinking about this.
All right.
Let's say the Yankees hit better the second half of the season.
Okay.
We see Rizzo get going. We see LeMahieu get going. We see strides from Volpe. They win 88 games, miss the postseason. Could Sean Casey work his way into being the next manager of the New York Yankees? Everybody Ooh. Loves him. He's good with the media. He's a gregarious guy. There is a result on the field.
Now, granted,
whoever is the manager of the Yankees is basically being run from above, but
yeah.
Because here's the thing about firing Aaron Boone. And look, I thought they should have done it last year, but I thought they should have done it in one clean house sweep where you change everything.
Yeah.
It's going to be really hard for them to go get a manager that replaces what Aaron Boone is, because Aaron Boone's probably going to get another job within 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And he'll win 90, that's the thing. Like, I think Aaron Boone might be a perfectly fine manager, but he's just in this situation where he's not the best manager in baseball, and he's got this hardly flawed roster with all these Cashman quirks and rules.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the thing. It's like the transition – it's worked out in terms of regular season success. The transition from Girardi to Boone was a pretty steep drop-off. Here's a guy who won the World Series, who's part of the glory days, and out here is a guy who was on Sunday Night Baseball.
And on the team for like 10 minutes.
10 minutes, exactly.
Yeah.
So then you go from that to, you know, like, bring in Hensley Mullins, but you bring in some guy who was the AAA, some guy who was the manager of the Rail Riders and all the kids like him. Like, that's hard to do.
Yeah.
But if it's Sean Casey, you know, there's some juice to that if they hit.
There is some juice that they hit. I will say this about Sean Casey being hired as the Yankee manager. That would make the Aaron Boone heel turn all the better and more interesting. Because, like, he brings in his best friend only to be fired, and the same friend takes his job.
Yeah.
Maybe Casey is a loyal enough guy that he, like, tells Cashman, no, like, screw you. I'm not taking the job. You fired my guy.
He could be, although, like, I think there's two tensions to play. One, like, it's the Yankees. You know, if you're going to manage New York Yankees, you kind of got to do it. Two, I think it was a couple of years ago, there was a report that, like, Aaron Boone made $1 million a year. And, like, that's not a lot of money for these guys. And, like,
that's not – like, a million a year.
I'm sure he makes more now, but, like
– right. But, like, for a first-time manager, especially right now, and maybe even, like, a semi-experienced manager, between $1 and $2 million is about par for the course.
Par for the course, but like if you're Sean Casey and you got a cushy job at MLB Network you can go back to, it's like you might have to pay up a little bit, and we all know that Hal doesn't really like to pay up when he doesn't have to. So
I don't know, it's interesting. All this to say, we're at the trade deadline and the Yankees are absolutely going to be buyers. Mark Feinsand said today they're looking not just at corner outfield help, relief pitching, which we just talked about, they definitely need another reliever. They are looking for catching help, which, okay, I mean, you need a very specific target if you're going to try to replace Jose Trevino. They're also looking for starting pitching, where there's maybe a handful of guys there who could help out. If you're in the GM's chair, Kretch, who are you going after and why?
So first off, I'm going after Cody Bellinger. I mean, I thought the report this morning was a little concerning of like, hey, you know, the Yankees could be in on Cody Bellinger, but Randall Grichuk, like $3 million remaining. Like, he might be a fit, but I just thought if that's what we're going to spend the next 2 weeks with the Yankees pretending that they're in on Shohei Ohtani.
That's where this is going.
Here's the thing, like, if this is going to sound crazy, but I was thinking about this today, it'd be a total insane move. If I was the Yankees, I would call the Mets and talk about Verlander or Scherzer.
All right.
and return for House for taking that contract on, whoever it is, I want David Robertson.
Yeah, I mean,
because I think if you get Verlander here, if you know, and Verlander doesn't have the no trade clause.
Nope.
You get him here. You have him and Cole back to back in a postseason series. You add Robertson to the bullpen. Court Nestor gets healthy. You start to talk yourself into, if the guys we have start to hit, maybe we have something here.
Yeah, I mean, I've wanted David Robertson. I mean, I never wanted him to leave, if we're being completely honest. Like, I never wanted him to leave even when he went to the White Sox. So I think I'm never going to say no to David Robertson. Verlander, I mean, you're banking on him being able to manage Yankee Stadium just because he's a pure fastball guy and they have the short porches on both sides. I mean, I don't know. Alec, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I got a little bit of a chuckle when I saw that article about, like, what the Yankees are going to go after. Because it's like, well, damn, it sounds like they're going to go after a completely new team. but I agree with James where, you know, I would like to see Bellinger, you know, possibly be a realistic target for the Yankees to go after. And just, I want to say real quickly how nice it is to see both Bellinger and Yelich have such bounce back years.
Is Yelich having a bounce back year? I haven't really been following.
Yeah, he's hitting about 280 with, like, I think as many home runs as he had last year. So he's, you know, he's not MVP level, but he's, you know, it's good to see that because those are two, like, some really good players I always love to enjoy. But anyway,
quick Christian Yelich story. That MVP year, we went to I was at the awards dinner when he got the trophy. That, like, he was mobbed for autographs. That was someone who was not ready to be, like, a top tier star. He was, you could see how overwhelmed he was.
Yeah, I mean, so Bellinger would be a really intriguing option. I can't see the Yankees going to the Mets for any help. But I don't know. The Yankees are going to be linked to Ohtani, as you said. They're going to be linked to Soto. It's going to be this never-ending kind of just nausea-inducing, you know, media reel of these are the big name Yankees are going to go after, and this is who they need to trade. Honestly, I can't imagine that going. I personally don't think going for it or going with the idea that, hey, we have a legitimate shot at contention is necessarily the best idea. It's hard for me to admit. But there's not enough intriguing options out there outside of a guy like Bellinger for me to be like, yeah, you get that piece, and then you get these two pieces. Then we're talking, then we're cooking. Because, you know, at what point in this timeline do they have to make these moves by? Because as they keep squandering series like they did against Colorado, that distance between them and, you know, the top of their division and then eventually the wild card gets wider and wider. Are there enough players out there on the market that we feel confident in, like, the Yankees can go out and get them at reasonable prices to catapult themselves back into contention? I'm just not as confident in thinking that.
No, I think I've written this. The only way I look at it, they can transform this team at the deadline, is they have to convince Stanton to waive a no trade clause and go. And look, they're not going to get Ohtani. I think there's, like, a sliver of a path with Soto that you could talk Stanton into going to the Padres. Hey, you're still going to be in a race, you know, in theory. You're going to get money. If you're the Padres, you say, okay, like, we're not completely bailing on the idea of having this super team. We're just getting someone who's older but a little bit more cost-effective. And I know, like, there was all this talk that Soto needs his own team, but Soto's at the point now where he's not going to get the $450 million contract that the Nationals offered him that he turned down. So he's got to take whatever he can get, and he might get – he's got to recoup as much as he can in New York. One last guy. I know that the Guardians are in this perpetual, like, are they sellers? Are they buyers? What should they do thing in the AL Central?
What a bad division.
A bad division. Stephen Kwan, if I'm the, like a true leadoff hitter, maybe oversell, pay a little bit with some prospects. I just wonder, like, what would this team look like if they had a true, you shore up left field, you have a true leadoff hitter, you can, Volpe can hit ninth and just stay there the rest of the year. You know, get LeMahieu out of that spot. Like, what happens then?
Well, because, I mean, like, you know, if you think about it, this lineup doesn't just need a few new pieces injected. It needs a complete makeover in the sense where, you know, I never, based off of what we were seeing in 2016 and 2017, I never thought that we would be right back here in such a quick amount of time of being an old, slow, unathletic lineup. And, you know, especially now with Judge out, you know, for however long he's going to remain out, you know, you got guys like Rizzo, you got guys like Stanton, Donaldson, you know, these are guys who are aging poorly.
Oh, and by the way, Donaldson's not getting traded anywhere. He apparently has a high grade 2, maybe a grade 3 strain of his calf. So he's probably out for the season.
I saw that. I was like, he got two opinions. I'm like, the whichever doctor had the worst opinion, like, the Yankees will take that one.
However, I just got this notification from Mark Feinsend. Yankees are apparently eyeing Dylan Carlson of the Cardinals.
That's not a bad idea. I mean, that kind of fills in the idea of they get a little younger, they get a little bit more athletic. Same thing with Stephen Kwan. They need to get back to This is the Yankee way they've been doing for as long as either of us can remember. But, you know, they need to get away from just getting the marquee names for the sake of getting the name, and they just got to get ball players. You know, you look at teams that are playing better than them, and on paper, you wouldn't think that they are a better team than the New York Yankees, but it's just at the end of the day, they are ball players. Like, I'm looking at the Baltimore Orioles right now. I have the game on, and they, you know, they blew a 4-1 lead. They're losing 6-4 to the Dodgers. But you look at the guys they have in their lineup. They got Gunnar Henderson, who you know, has an 810 OPS. Then you have Rutschman, who has an 812 OPS. Santander, 844. O'Hearn, 866. I mean, like, you don't get those numbers anymore from a Yankees team unless you're Aaron Judge. Like, the problem with the Yankees, and it's I'm going on a rant right now, so I apologize. But, like, as a guy who's living in Philadelphia right now and is watching the Philadelphia Phillies, it's interesting the dichotomy between the two, because the Phillies have a lot of good complementary pieces. It's the big guys aren't performing, right? So the Phillies got guys like Bryson Stott, who are hitting around 300, is one of the best two-strike hitters in baseball, just slaps the ball wherever he wants to. Really fun to watch. You got Alec Boehm, who's hitting 284. He's just Alec Boehm, professional hitter. It's awesome. Harper, the power is down, obviously coming off an injury, but he's Bryce Harper. And then you got the disappointing seasons coming from Schwarber to an extent. He's got 26 home runs. He's got an on-base percentage over 300, even though his batting average is under 2. And then you have Turner, who hasn't quite lived up to the billing yet. And then you have Nick Castellanos, who's fantastic. Their struggles, they haven't their own reasons, but the big guys aren't quite carrying their weight as they should be, even though that the complementary pieces are doing more than enough. With the Yankees, it's not only are your big pieces not performing, it's now you don't have any good complementary pieces to help shore up that gap. It's kind of the same thing we talked about last year, where the frustrations of having Hicks, IKF, and Donaldson in the same lineup is you could get by with IKF production. I have no problem with him as a ball player. It's just that when you combine that with Aaron Hicks being a black hole, and then when you have Donaldson being a black hole, like, all of a sudden, that's a third of your lineup.
It's just not producing.
Not producing. And we find ourselves in the same exact spot because Brian Cashman tries to gaslight the entire fan base. But anyway.
It goes back to, like, this, like, almost like, I swear to God, I felt like I was writing one of the Federalist Papers when I was doing this the other day. It just goes to, like, this pretty much treatise I wrote about Sean Casey really being a litmus test for how we're going to approach hitting in baseball going forward. Because for, like, 20-odd years, these people with a computer said, oh, everyone's shifting, so instead of, like, using the whole field, you know what? Just hit over the entire shift. Let's just, like, murder the ball over that and cue a bunch of Joey Gallos. Now, like, you have guys who have been there, like Sean Casey, who have worked a count, who have read a field, who have, like, been in that situation, like, okay, what's the state of the game right now? Where's the base runner? What do I need to do? It's like, It's like I said in the article, Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, like all these old-time guys, they're not talking about pitch shape. They're not talking exit velocity. They're not talking about launch angle. They're talking, okay, where are we going to go hang out after the game? They're saying, okay, is this a pitch in the strike zone? Great. I'm going to take a swing and see what I can do with it. That's all you need to do in the box. See the ball, hit the ball. Stuff like weighted on base average, isolated power, those are measuring sticks. They are not talent evaluators. That's the end of my rant.
No, I've never understood why baseball has gone so far into this when the other sports haven't. Now, I know there's a tremendous amount more volume and data and things to track with baseball kind of plays into this. But I just go back to, I think we may have discussed in the past, the whole idea of Moneyball. Like, yes, it helped the A's find some inefficiencies and win with the payroll they had. The biggest issue was they had Barry Zuto, Tim Hudson, and Mark Mulder. Like, that's why they were great.
Yeah.
And they had Jason Giambi at the time. It was like, oh, that's what happened.
And a roided up Miguel Tejada.
Exactly. It was like, well, we got these three of the five best pitchers in baseball at that moment. That's why we're winning a lot. And yeah, it's just like, well, if they had spent more time on base running, they would have beaten the Red Sox in the 2003 ALDS. You know, Eric Burns would have touched home plate, and we wouldn't be – the whole world would have changed. But anyway, so – and then in 2004, the Red Sox use Moneyball, and then they get to the trade deadline. Like, okay, we have, like, the worst defense in, you know, modern history, basically. We have to fix this. Let's go trade for Orlando Cabrera because Nomar can't even bend down anymore. And then they won the World Series with Moneyball, but they fixed all the inefficiencies of Moneyball because they had the money on the fly. So, yeah, it's just they go through this rabbit hole. And Josh, you're right. Like, it's baseball. Like, they just need to play baseball. And it seems like I thought they were getting to that point where they got rid of Gallo and, you know, like a guy like Volpe, like he's struggling, but he plays baseball. You know, he hits the ball. He steals bases when he gets on. He has some power.
I mean,
I thought they were getting to that point, but they're just not. I think the biggest issue this team has had is Rizzo.
Yeah, Rizzo is very obvious.
He's hurt. And he, you know, God bless him. You know, he clearly feels he has to be in the lineup every day.
Yeah.
But if he was right, I think this would be a different story because he was, you know, like, and it's unfortunate, like, Bader is what he is. He's always going to have health issues, but like when he's out there, like I feel like they have actual baseball players, quote unquote,
sure,
but they're banged up or they're just not quite ready yet to do what they have to do.
Yeah. And like that isn't to say that there isn't utility to analytics. I mean, like, with pitching at 100 makes sense to use them because, Alec, you've said this several times, all throughout baseball history, hitting has stayed the same, like, but the power's gone up, but pitching has consistently gotten better. Like, guys are throwing faster. They're spinning the ball better. More pitches are being created. So it makes sense to have, for pitchers to have access to all that data so they understand not just how to do their job best, but also just what their bodies are doing. Whereas, like, with hitting, see the ball, hit the ball. You don't need to worry about, like pitch shape, exit velocity. That's a good tool for developing prospects, but at the pros, you shouldn't need that.
No.
Yeah, I mean, like, it all needs to be taken in moderation, and we've just watched people jump 2 feet into, you know, the pond with it. And it's just it can't be the end all be all. Like you said, you know, going back to Christian Yelich, I was a year early on his resurgence. I said last year it was going to be the year where he has a comeback because his metrics are starting to look good again. And then it happens this year. So, like, you know, there are stories to be told and pathways to be charted by the numbers. But I thought you made a pretty salient point there where it's like, you know, it's not a talent evaluation. It's just a measurement to see if a guy is on and if he's either healthy or playing hurt, you know. But it shouldn't be the way to evaluate talent. You can't just be like, well, this guy has an ISO of XYZ, so if we bring him over, then, you know, we're going to get that, even if he only hits 200. It's like, look, you know, I don't care if a guy's hitting 280 and his OPS is 680. right? You know, it's if the dude's getting on base and he's a table setter at the top of the lineup to let the big boys eat, that's very valuable. Like, you look at some of those like members of the dynastic Yankees in the 90s, you know, they wouldn't have survived in today's game. But, you know, you had role players doing what they were good at, and that's why the 1998 Yankees are the greatest team in MLB history. You know, it's just you can't make everyone into this, you know, 950 OPS MVP caliber player. Like, those guys are few and far between and should be treated as such.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the Judges, the Otanis, the Trouts, like, those guys are unicorns. You can't take some Joe Schmo who, like, again, going back to witnessing it from a Phillies perspective from being in Philadelphia, Scott Kingery is the number one example where, like, metrics ruined that dude's career.
Yeah.
They tried to turn him into something that he's not, and he can't find his way back into the majors. And so, like, numbers are dangerous. They're useful, but they're dangerous because you're going to get these fanatics just wanting to say, this is how you craft a baseball player, which you can't. It's baseball. There are times where it just doesn't make sense.
It is amazing, like, the 98 to 2000 Yankees, like, they kept Louis Soho employed for, like, one at-bat a year, basically. Yeah. And he would come through, and that was all worth it. But now it's just
– didn't they bring back Luis Polonia twice as well?
Exactly, you know. It's just guys. That's the thing, too. It's like those Yankees –
Immaculate Grid, please sponsor us.
Yes. Those had guys that would carry the team, you know, for a couple of days or could fill in, you know. I mean, this Yankees team has none of those guys. You know, 2000 Yankees don't win the World Series without Jose Vizcaíno. Yeah. And think about it. Like, that was a move where, like, the Yankees spent money. He was probably making $10 million a year to be a backup middle infielder. Do you think these Yankees would do that? Hell no.
No, like – it's funny to say that because you mentioned someone like Jose Vizcaíno, and then you see how someone like an Oswald Peraza, like an Ozzie Cabrera, like a I see him right in front of me, like a Kyle Higashioka, who can sort of become that weird hero, and Higashioka has been that hero sometimes.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's just very frustrating because, like, pivoting back to the Donaldson deal, I remember when it happened. Yeah, like, anytime you take on a player who is in their mid-late 30s, you're assuming a risk that they're going to decline. And Cashman did assume that risk, especially when he took on the money. And if you look at Donaldson's Savant page for 2021, it wasn't a bad trade because, like, my main take, like, I remember, I think, Alec, you and I were talking about this, how, like, okay, he's not going to have a great batting average. He's going to strike out a lot, but he's not going to swing at any pitches out of the zone. He's not going to chase bad pitches. Comes to the Yankees with Dylan Lawson, and all of a sudden he's swinging at all the bad pitches.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, again, that is a tool to where, you know, you look at trends, you look at what, like, a hitter's profile may be, and you try to hope, okay, the numbers look like he still hits the ball hard. If he can get the ball elevated, you can take the good with the bad. Again, when you have three or four players in your lineup like that, that's not a recipe for success. And then when it became evident that Josh Donaldson was just not the answer. Yeah. Like, yeah, you give him a year, you go into a little bit this year, and then it's the same shit over and over again. And now he's injured for, what, the second time this season?
Yeah. Like, yeah. And, like, because it's like I was going to say earlier, sorry, because I got off on a rant there, but you assume that he's going to decline. You don't assume that he's going to fall off a cliff.
Yeah. But the problem with Cashman is, you know, we see him falling off the cliff. We see Donaldson just plummeting.
Right.
And the same way we saw Hicks plummeting. That was, you know, we see these guys, they just completely fall off. And instead of just being like, okay, we got to move on to the next thing, Cashman's telling you, oh, no, well, we can catch him and we can put him right back onto the cliff. And I promise you, he's not going to fall off again. And it becomes this just like this insanity of, you know, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting something different to happen. And, like, that's the most frustrating part as a Yankee fan, where it's like, you know, yeah, we are probably half a season now too late with Donaldson. Like, we should have had we should have been quicker in terms of finding a solution rather than just letting time play out and be like, oh, don't worry, he's going to find it. He's going to find it. Okay, well, it's almost August. He's hurt. Now we're scrambling to, you know, have his replacement. I'm like, yes, we called up Peraza, you know, and I think Peraza is going to be a good player. But, like, now we're in a situation where the Yankees have fallen to the bottom of the AL East. They're two games out of the wild card. And now our entire left side of our infield is under 24 years old.
We'll put a bow on this with this. I mean, like, as much as we criticize Cashman, A, he's still good enough at his job that he's going to keep the job. B, he's broken out of his comfort zone enough times in the last several months that he has to be aware that the system's broken. And I think Hal might have told him as such before getting him the new contract. But he's clearly seeing changes need to happen. I hope that Sean Casey works out. The Yankees, we can only hope for the best because God, what a disappointing season. It's like, no matter how you spin it, it's a disappointment.
Yeah.
Anyway, happier news. The reason James Cratch is here with us today is that recently during the All-Star break in the ESNY Slack chat, we were talking about what changes would we make to the game. And we had the usual things. Some said get rid of interleague play. I said get rid of the three batter rule for pitchers. James, you kind of went all in. And Alec is also a soccer fan here. The FA Cup, but for baseball.
Yeah, so I preface this like this, I'm not my original idea. Other people have said it, written it before. I think MLB reportedly even kicked the tires on it. I was kind of inspired by the NBA, this new in-season tournament, which this is like just a bad knockoff of the FA Cup to me. But I feel like baseball could actually, of all the sports in the U.S., baseball could capture the essence of it in a way that these others can't. And yeah, obviously, we got 30 major league teams. We got 120 affiliated clubs, A ball, AAA. I say throw in the 45 independent league teams. They're in the partner leagues. And just because I was feeling particularly frisky, I was like, what if the returning? So if you're going to have the 2024 Nation Series, I called it, the 2023 Division I, II, and III national champions in college baseball would get invites.
Okay.
Obviously, the players might not be the same, but the teams would. Like, you'd earn your invite to Nation Series. So basically, do it like the FA Cup. You know, you just have rounds and rounds of, you know, knockout games, and then eventually the big league teams show up. You know, I said, I think it's like the fourth round, you put 28 big league teams in the field. The fifth round, you know, the World Series champion and the reigning AL or NL pennant winner can go in last.
Yeah.
And you just would figure out a way to make it work through the schedule. You know, there'd be so much money to be made that the Players Association and the league office would be wise to work together. You know, you could start the season a couple days early. I've never understood why we don't do that already and just basically rig it so the Yankees might start the season on the road every year, but you know, they'd be in Tampa or be in the Marlins or something. Like,
yeah,
they're staggered. So you only have so many cold weather games on a true opening day. And then just, you have tentpole holidays. You got Memorial Day, you got 4th of July, you got Labor Day. Like, make those Nation Series days. You'll build Mondays into the schedule or Thursdays. Have a couple of, you know, pre-scheduled doubleheaders or two.
Given the setup of it all, you could probably make it so that the major league teams probably don't even enter play until about midway through spring training.
Yeah, I would say, like, you know, they could enter it, like, they don't have to enter until like May even.
Yeah.
You know, you could make it work that way. And then you'll have the championship game on, you know, Labor Day. You know, make it a thing. So then championship game is over. You still got a month left in the regular season, you know. You'd be creative. Like, I would do it like the FA Cup where it's just total random draws. But if you really need to, you know, like if the way the bracket lays up, the Yankees are going to play the Tigers in the next round of the thing, and the Yankees are going to play the Tigers a week and a half from then in the regular season game, just or like you want to sell it to Apple, right?
Yeah.
You could sell Apple, like, hey, Apple, like, every time there's a regular season game that we're Friday night, Yankees are starting a three-game series in Detroit. That Friday night game is the nation series game. It's also a regular season game.
Yeah.
If that happens, Apple, you get all of those games no matter when it's broadcast.
Yeah, and like on and on top of that, you can excuse me. You God, I completely lost my train of thought. You can also maybe include Japanese teams as well. You can like go
I was
a little,
just about to say.
Yeah.
Like if you really want to get it to like international, so I think that would be cool. Like
yeah, oh, I remember. So you're James, you made the point and you kind of made me realize this. The NFL has a monopoly on Thanksgiving. The NBA has a monopoly on Christmas Day. MLB doesn't have one. Like the best they have is All-Star Week.
And it could have three of them. They could have Memorial Day, they could have 4th of July, they could have Labor Day. You know, it's there for them, you know? I mean, and I just think like the possibilities you would have would be endless. You know, it would get people involved. Like let's say the Oakland Athletics sat there and said, you know what? Like, we're just going to sell out to try to win this thing.
Yeah.
It would be amazing. There are some years, like back in the day, like with the Somerset Patriots back in the glory days when they were in the Atlantic League, they probably had a team that would beat some affiliated team.
My dad used to have season tickets to the Atlantic City Surf, and I remember one summer Ruben Sierra was on the team.
Exactly, you know? the Long Island Ducks, if they got Daniel Murphy batting leadoff, the idea of like, hey, you could have that happen. You know, what happens if the Patriots are playing, you know, the Harrisburg Senators in an early round game and Aaron Judge happens to be doing a rehab assignment for the Patriots? He gets to play in the Nations League game. He hits three home runs, you know, advance.
You could find a way to get the Savannah Bananas involved.
Exactly. That's the thing. Like I think you have to have, you know, FA Cup has the semi-pro teams. I think you have to have those independent teams that are kind of give that, like, anything can happen sense. And then just think about the cool possibilities. Like, I wrote a couple down, like, imagine if the Dodgers random draw got sent to play the Brooklyn Cyclones. Like, imagine the massive event that would be if the Dodgers came back to Brooklyn to play a baseball game.
Exactly.
In this tournament.
And not just that, like, if you really want to make it all FA Cup, like, you're obviously for like the Nation Series games, you're going to let teams use their full 40-man rosters, maybe even up rosters to 50 in that case.
Exactly. Up rosters is 50, you know, use guys. I think you have to have total freedom of motion. And like, there are ways to get this done quickly. Like you could have 10-run rule. You could end games after 5 innings, you know, you could move this thing along.
Yeah, a 10-run rule for the Nation Series 100% makes sense. Because, like, yeah, you have to, like, allow for a certain amount of college rules, I think.
Yeah.
And it's even more fun because, let's say, like, you mentioned the college teams. Come June, the College World Series is happening.
Exactly. But, like, my thing is, like, imagine if we had the setup where, like, LSU just won the College World Series in May.
Again, in May,
is playing that Astros, who just won the World Series in a Nations League game. And then with NIL and everything, you can kind of get around it. You know, I just think the possibilities are endless. And yes, at the end of the day, like, you'd have big league teams win it. And some years you would and winning the Nations Series and the World Series, like, that could be a massive accomplishment, you know, for a team like the Astros. You might have a team that's not in contention for the postseason stay in, you know, be invested. This is their thing, you know.
Now, remind me, what's the grand prize for winning the Nation Series?
The grand prize for winning the Nation Series is just a big trophy, and I think you would set up so every player on the winning team would get, you know, 250, you know, a significant chunk of change.
Yeah.
The All cool right. idea I had is that if an affiliated team, if a minor league club were to win the Nation Series one year, that team would earn the right to host the Major League All-Star Game at their building in the future.
Yeah, I like that.
Like, think about how, because I feel like that's like the one tangible thing you could give to award these if the Toledo Mud Hens win the Nation Series.
Yeah.
And look, I don't think it's impossible that a Triple A team could win one of these things, especially if with the draws, you know, if you're lucky, you could be a Triple A team that doesn't enter the tournament until like three or four rounds in based on a draw. Yeah, like give Toledo the MLB All-Star game. It'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, like plus, like all three of us here have watched enough FA Cups, Carabao Cups, Clásicos, World Cups, whatever you want to call it. Like, if you put this in like a soccer type environment with baseball, it's 100% set up so that sort of quadruple A All-Stars can look like All-Stars for a hot minute.
Yeah, exactly. And I think like the big league teams would have to take it seriously.
Oh yeah.
If the Yankees didn't take it seriously and they lost to, you know, the Yankees lost to the, you know, Charleston River Dogs, like, it would not go over well, you know?
No, it wouldn't. It's like, yeah, because you need to, it's just the right amount of controlled chaos that it could work.
Just the right amount of controlled chaos. It can fit into the schedule. You know, you get creative.
Yeah, like I don't know how many people here have seen the original Rollerball with Jimmy Kahn, but this is something that there's so much money to be made. Like we were just talking about, just enough controlled chaos, and it's just going to be fun. Like the more we talk about it, the more I actually want this to happen.
Yeah, it'll just be fun. And like, look, maybe you don't start with everyone in the pool. Maybe you come up with some sort of staggered thing, but I understand why the NBA went to the in-season tournament. It's like they need to create a new revenue stream. But yeah. I just don't see anyone taking it. Like, the players will take it seriously once they're there. But right. The fan, and like, yes, having it in Las Vegas will give it that sort of glow. But obviously the NFL's never going to do this.
Right.
You know? And hockey could do it, but I just think it wouldn't be as kind of tightly knit, because obviously hockey, you'd have U.S., Canada, everything. Like, this is not a hockey podcast, but I've always said, like, if one of our leagues is going to do promotion and relegation, it's going to be the NHL, just because the lowest, not counting the Coyotes who play in a college, you know, small college arena, like, the lowest attendance figure, the two or three bottom teams in attendance in the NHL are basically on par with the top two or three, you know, attendance teams in the AHL.
Yeah.
So, like, does it matter if you've got 10,000 people a night going to see the Columbus Blue Jackets or the Hershey Bears if you're the NHL? Doesn't really matter. You could have that sort of system.
Not to mention just the crazy infrastructure that is independent minor league hockey that just that's the engine that keeps on chugging along.
Yeah. No, it's a good the NBA. I've always said the NBA and the NHL are entertainment products. That's why I think an NBA team will eventually be in Vegas, and an NHL team, even the Raiders work in Vegas, because it's like a Celine Dion show. It's like there's a finite amount of events on the schedule, and people go there. I am very skeptical about baseball working in Las Vegas, just because there's 81 dates. There's not a scarcity and a demand like you have with football or hockey or basketball. And I know the Las Vegas, you know, Triple A team has good attendance, but it's just like, you know, you don't want, I'm afraid that baseball is going to, the A's are going to find themselves being like the Chargers in Los Angeles. You are dependent on the other team's fans showing up to pack your stadium and spend give you money.
Not to mention, you're going to have to play home games in Las Vegas in the middle of summer.
Yes. And even if you have an indoor building, it's just like, and it might be fun for, you know, Yankee fans will do a bachelor party once and like, it'll be fun, but like that novelty is going to wear off eventually.
Yeah. It's not sustainable. No. Anyway, Alec, what do you think? You like the baseball FA Cup idea?
I do. And, you know, I'm kind of sitting there thinking, like, in what part makes soccer so special is that, like, it's accessible everywhere. And there's such an interconnectedness to the sport, especially like at the pro level. you know, not even just in the FA Cup, but the Champions League, all that stuff. Like, it becomes this whole spectacle that the entire continent of Europe, and then in some cases, you know, teams from Asia are partaking in. And so if it would be such a revolutionary idea to try to create something off of that model, because as you mentioned, Josh, like, you know, you have Japanese league, like the, you know, Japanese teams who are incredible to watch. You have Dominican teams that have talent that are just waiting to, you know, rise to the occasion. So, like, can you imagine a tournament that's not only just like, you know, a team like LSU who has a player like Paul Skeens, imagine them going up against a Japanese team with Roki Sasaki. And then, you know, then you got like Skeens going up against Murakami and Sasaki going to whoever was the was Dylan Cruz. You know, like all of a sudden you have just the best of the best, not just in Major League Baseball, but in just in the entire world going up against each other. And that's when you get like these incredible storylines and crazy moments that, you know, we know from anyone who watches soccer, like think of fun, you know, like. It is such a revolutionary idea that I would love to see it happen. It's going to take someone brave as hell to suggest it.
The dry run of it should happen in the minors first. Do it there, like the first, let's say, 2-3 years, maybe roll in some of the affiliate leagues and the independent teams.
I'd agree with that. Like, you know, you come with like, you know, because now that they really don't have postseasons,
right?
You know, or, you know, the minor league cup or something. Maybe it's this built thing and it's this elaborate, and, you know, maybe it's even double elimination. It's just this totally wacky. Because that's my thing. Like, the only teams you'd to pull this off logistically, the only thing you'd have to account for is the big league schedule, which I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but 120 affiliated teams, 45 independent teams, like, they're going to show up whatever the hell they need to show up. You know, it's like, and I think it would help because I don't really understand the whole concept. I get it. It's cheaper, and that's what Rob Manfred wants. But, like, this whole idea that, like, the Rail Riders go to Buffalo and they play the Bison for 6 straight games, including, like, games on, like, 11 a.m. on a Tuesday, and then that somehow is getting them ready to play in the big leagues. I don't really get that.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. We'll close with this because we're 8 minutes till game time. Backtracking for Alec. James suggested this earlier, man. What if at the end of the year, the Yankees are hitting better, but miss the playoffs, Aaron Boone gets shit canned, Sean Casey gets his job?
I don't know. It's funny because all I think of when I think of Sean Casey is that TV personality of him.
Yeah.
But then again, Aaron Boone was a TV personality. It'll be interesting. You know, I would probably like that idea a little bit more than the one you suggested yesterday.
Paul Molitor.
But, you know, we are getting to that point where Boone, I think, is going to be managing for his job soon. And so if Sean, and like, I think I caught the tail end of it, where you were saying, like, Casey doesn't seem to be the kind of guy who would want to, you know, dance on his friend's grave, so to speak. That definitely comes into play, but it's not a crazy idea.
I just think it happens. If they move on from Boone, it's like, all right, you're keeping Cashman. Cashman's wildly unpopular, even more so after this season. I don't underestimate the value of like a friendly face to put on this mess. And I really think there's a chance that Sean Casey could be that. Because, like, let's be honest, like, Aaron Boone, I wrote this, like, one of the few things he's really good at right now is just snarling at reporters. Like, it's really becoming, I think, a thing to watch the rest of the way from, like, a media standpoint, is that Aaron Boone does not seem to, you know, he just does not seem to be, and I think part of it is because he probably realizes he's getting walked down the road under the bus as this all falls apart. But Sean Casey is affable, he's gregarious, he's happy. You know, everyone's got Sean Casey stories. You know, if they make a move, Cashman's going to want a likable guy to be the face of this disaster. And Sean Casey could be likable enough.
And that makes sense because I think it was Heyman or Sherman in the Post who said that they wanted to hire him in the wintertime, but his girlfriend was undergoing chemo and he wanted to stay with her. So yeah, maybe it does make sense that he'd get the big job.
One thing I also I have no evidence to support this whatsoever. It's just a hunch. I don't think the Yankees are going to become, so to speak, the Yankees again until they start fucking relaxing on these strict company rules that have been placed since George. So if Sean Casey comes in and he's going to be the guy to be like, hey, facial hair, long hair, we need those rules back. We got to let these guys be themselves, and we got to create a more modern, non-corporate culture around this team. I truly think that plays some part in this. Like team culture used to be like the dynastic Yankees, their culture was they were so dedicated to winning. And that they, and we heard Jeter say it 1,000 times, anything short of World Series was failure. And the great thing about those teams was that was a shared singular like vision, ambition from the entire team.
Right.
And this generation of players, which is my generation, I am as old as most of these guys in the major leagues, they don't think the same way. And that's okay. It's just some teams have done a better job in modernizing with the incoming group of players, and the Yankees are trailing behind. And, you know, maybe Sean Casey, in that sense, if he becomes the next head coach, becomes like a vocal, you know, supporter to and kind of speaks out to Hal and speaks out to Cash. And it's just like, we need to modernize.
Yeah.
We need to get loose in here. We need to have fun. We can't have this, like, you know, oh, it's the Yankees. You know, it's
Yankee way.
Yeah. The Yankee way needs to die because the game's changed.
Cause like, yeah, you said it, right there, Alec. At some point along the way, the Derek Jeter's success with the Yankees and his career and like his entire career, that commitment to winning, it became less about, okay, let's just set the goal. We're going for the World Series every year. That's our common goal. It became like, not only do you have to win the World Series, you have to make it look as good as Jeter did when he was doing it.
Yeah.
Like it's like, okay, like this is the bar you need to meet, instead when it should just be like former Blue Jays manager Cito Gaston said, just go out and play.
Yeah. You know, it started a little bit with like, let the kids have fun. And we saw how much life was injected into Yankee Stadium and in the Bronx in general when Gary Sanchez and Aaron Judge were doing their thing.
Yeah.
And Severino was lights out. But, like, again, that seemed like it was going to be the ushering in of a new era. And it lasted for a few years. And then we're kind of right back to where we started in the 2010s, which is a dead team walking. And, you know, that life, that vigor, that, you know, passion to play baseball, I don't see it. It's concerning, and something needs to change, I think, on that end too. It's not just this, like, you know, breaking down the roster. It's an entire makeover, and that's going to ruffle some feathers, because, you know, the Yankees are based off of tradition. You know, there's nothing wrong with tradition, but in this case, tradition may need to die.
Yeah.
They have an insurance company's logo on their sleeve now. So I think at this point, it's time to let the guys grow their hair out a little bit.
The only
thing left that makes the Yankees the quote-unquote Yankees is John Sterling in the booth. it's the truth. He is the last bridge between what was and what is. So my thing is, the minute the insurance company went on the uniform, it's just, you know, let it go. Go get him a shampoo deal, Hal. Official shampoo of the Yankees. You'll love it.
Oh, Lord. Okay. And with that, I think it is time to hit stop on this and watch the game. Luis Severino versus, I think it's Griffin Canning for the Angels tonight. James, thanks for coming on the show. That was a great talk about your tournament idea. And, like, I hope it happens.
Hopefully it happens. Thank you for having me, guys.
Of course. And yeah, we will see you guys next time.